Hi everyone, my name's Shamila. I've got a very strong Yorkshire accent. My passion's always been with asylum seekers and refugees. I've done a lot of work around them. I worked with Northern Refugee Centre for 5.5 years, and then from there I moved on to working in the Home Office, which is a separate story which I didn't like. But going to Calais was an experience which I dealt with asylum seekers coming in through the doors to help them, but seeing them come into the country and the way they were living. I thank Maxine for giving me the opportunity to go along to volunteer at Calais, and I did not believe to expect the experience that I had. I didn't think the way they were living, where I was in living in life with denial. We went to one of the camps, and it was like, you know, they had a call out. So these people were like in a jungle, coming out of trees, coming out behind bushes, and there was a call out to tell them that refreshments were here. So they came out, and they were coming in groups of threes and fours, scared. It's like watching a human circus. That's how I'm going to describe it. Watching them come out, scared, terrified, don't know whether to trust us, can't speak English, some could, but very little. So the youngest there, which touched me the most, was there was a 13-year-old boy who I spoke to, and he had told me that his mum didn't even know where he were. And at that moment, I had to think of myself being a volunteer and a vulnerable young boy. And I've got an 18-year-old. For me to look at that boy and think, you're living rough here. And I've got my kids at home. So speaking to him and asking him, why did he come? And why did he choose to come? He said, for a better life. But there was trauma in his eyes. He wasn't happy. There were tents which the police come and burn them. They had tear gas the night before we got there. So these guys were without tents and tear gas at them at night, especially when it rains. They come and attack them when it rains. We spoke to a few of the young men who opened up and told us their experiences and what they were doing back home in their countries. For a split second, they forgot and they had a little laugh with us. And as they got involved in the laugh, one of them just turned around and cried and said, we've missed out on this. But it was the fact that myself and one of the counsellors was with us. We could speak the language, so they all crowded around us to speak. So it was quite nice because it actually encouraged Maxine and a few other volunteers to understand that a language is required. I'm going to start getting emotional because I can still picture it. So it was having to listen to them, the horrific, horrific stories, especially how the nights are passed. Sometimes, you know, the food rations, how they get food. They've got police patrol all the time, so there was like constant watch. Like I said, they may have fled the country to come to France to sit there, but it's no life. You're like, anything can happen and nobody will know. Like I'm saying, that 13-year-old boy, a 13-year-old, would we allow our 13-year-olds to be out anywhere? I mean, for an hour, if they're missing, for an hour, I'm on the phone, where are you? It's like 13 out of another country, no contact. And he, like I said, there was a level of contact. I just wanted to embrace him, to say everything would be okay, but I couldn't. I couldn't even lie to him because I don't know what's going to happen to him. Then we went to another camp the next day, and then we experienced there was one female in that camp, and she was the only female, Iranian background. And she fled the country because she was
LGBT.
So she had to fear her life, and she was with, yet again, a group of men living in this jungle. And she came out, she was quite happy, she goes, oh, they look after me. But she just, I can't even describe it in words, what we saw. And when people say, well, why are they coming here? You don't understand what they're fleeing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, some of them have got, the country's being invaded, they're leaving, fleeing from there for a better life. And then when they do get here, they've been stopped on and they're getting to, I can't even. Like I said, the experience that I've had, I would have never ever thought that. Coming home, our minds are still there. We're planning more trips to go over. But we're very fortunate. But like I said, my passion is, they've come here for a reason. They're here, treat them like humans. We are humans at the end of the day. I don't care about what colour or what race we're from. I'm a second generation born here. I will never class myself as being any different to anyone else. My colour does define me sometimes when I do go out and do a job. Like I get questioned, how long have you been in the country? But going back to asylum seekers and refugees and when people are being placed somewhere, our jobs are to help them. And like I said, I'm a mental health worker as well. So I know the background is how do we deal with people? And it does boil down to the gentleman sat next to me. With the Brexit side of stuff, mental health, it all lingers in. It's going to be a catastrophe, whatever happens. But talking about Calais, there's not enough done out there. A lot of people, like I said, they'll give you aid, they'll send everything. You have to go then in those detention camps and see how they're living. Ask them why they're there and why have they come here. We were on our way back and we were already traumatised with whatever we had seen. We had a delay, an hour and a half, in just getting closer to get onto our ferry back because a coach in front of us had a young boy who was trapped the night before and they were shouting him and the whole of the police system and the security had come to a standstill because this youngster, because they detected that there was somebody there, he wasn't with us, in other words. But he was trapped, they dismantled the whole of the coach to get him out. And it was just, it was getting us to move away. But that came back with us. This is how desperate people are. And they'll do anything. And I mean, they had sniffer dogs, they had people. It was so uncontrolled, the whole of the situation. Because they didn't know what they were doing. The security were running around, the police were running around. It was a child who was dead in the coach. And you know where he was? At the back of the engine. The back, which he had been bolted in. So no wonder he couldn't come out. So we've had to see that as we were coming back. So this is how desperate these people are. They don't choose to come. But we need to ask the question, why are they coming here? And what's given the purpose to? They're not fleeing for the fun of it. They're not. Sorry. Thank you.
That's what made me more angry and sad. We are happy to sell them guns and things. We should also be happy to accept the consequences and open the country for the refugees that we create. Mm-hmm. The United Kingdom is creating this problem. Because we're still selling arms to Saudi Arabia and everything. Mm-hmm. By mistake, apparently. I don't know how we can sell arms by mistake. But